or you're talking like hit.
8-inch dots.
Bear shaft. 100
yards. Yeah, 100.
Holy shit.
100. I've never had a bear shaft fly with flat shaft.
That's like, crazy.
Usually the... Wait, it gets even crazier. I'll tell you what this whole arrow is. It doesn't mathematically make sense to me. I can't quite figure it out.
Well, I'm not smart enough to understand math in the first place, so...
I have suspicions on why I think, but I don't know exactly. We'll get the cameras going first.
Good, we're hot.
We're hot.
I want to hear we're this. Rolling.
So this is an Easton 5.0.
Yeah.
So I was at my local...
That I've heard so much about.
Yeah. So I was at my local shop the other day, and I was just bumming around, looking, talking to my buddy Austin that works over there. So shout out Austin. I was just kind of looking around, seeing what they had going on, and chit-chatting, and I saw these Easton 5.0s, and I was like, oh man, these are tough to come by, right? Because they're hard to find in stock. But they only had a 300 spine, and I've been so curious about these. One, because they're a 5mm. I've found that like a larger diameter, I think, is a little easier to tune. So like a 2.46 arrow, like the old Pro Hunters from Gold Tip.
Yeah.
I've always had like easier time tuning those. So I just was like, I'm just going to buy them. I'm going to buy them and play with them, right? Because I had the night free. And so I built these up. So this finished arrow, it's a 300 spine arrow. It's a 34 grain insert. So it's got a hidden insert and then a collar. Which is 34 is pretty light for an insert,
yeah,
compared to what I've been shooting. Then 100
55 grit. Is what? Or yeah, you've been shooting 100? Yeah,
I've been shooting 75s and a 250 spine.
Yeah, so 55 is kind of like the lightest you really see, right?
Yeah, pretty light. So this total arrow build is 420 grains flat. So according to like
shafts. With veins.
With veins and nock. So super light, which I was thinking, I thought, you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll buy those and just shoot them out of my hunting bow just to see what they do for fun, kicks and giggles. And then I thought maybe at a minute, like if I wanted to, I could shoot them out of my Title, which is like a target bow, right? Mm-hmm. I thought they'd probably spine out for it. But they're supposed to be weak for my hunting bow, which is the Lift 33, Lift X. So.
Which you're at 75 pounds?
Like 71 pounds.
71.
It's like 71.
In a real long draw.
30-inch draw.
Yeah.
So it should spine out weak. According to like Shaft Selector, you know, when I looked at it, and they're 29.5 inches carbon to carbon. So I went up and shot them. Mainly, I was like curious to see how much distance I could get out of these, which it got interesting. So
did you cut it from carbon to carbon any shorter?
No, I cut it at 29.5.
Like you cut it to 20.
29.5 carbon to carbon.
You cut it to 29.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So what was interesting about it to me, paper tuned like bullet hole first arrow, which I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't think because I've been shooting a 498 grain arrow,
yeah,
and a 250 spine, 75 grain insert. So bullet holed straight through paper. And then I fletched like three arrows, and then I had probably three or four that were just bear shaft because I thought I'm going to go shoot bear shaft and fletch shaft just to see what the tune looks like. So first arrow was 20 yards and bear shaft hit with flat shaft. And I was like, oh, that's a good start. So I backed up to 30, same thing, bear shaft, flat shaft. And I was like, sick. So I was like, yeah, let's see what happens at 60. So bear shaft, flat shaft together at 60, which I was like, holy shit, that never happens to me. Cause like, I don't know if like my form is tight enough and typically like long draw lengths, you know, mm-hmm, it gets a little bit more finicky to shoot a bear shaft. So then before I left, I was shooting bear shafts and flat shafts at 100 and they were hitting together.
At 100 yards.
At 100 yards. Yeah, 100 yard bear shafts. Like for me, which is unheard of. Like I've never.
At 420, would you say 420?
At 420 grains flat, yeah.
420, hell yeah, dude.
So it was, yeah, 420. So what was really interesting also is that I thought, oh, this would be kind of like a fun build for like a tack event, you know, if you're going to shoot 120 yards or whatever, something stupid, right?
Yeah.
So I ended up sighting in my individual pins 20 through 60, and they are so stacked in so tight, and my eyes are so bad that they just blur together.
Really?
So, yeah, it's just halo. Like, they just burst out.
Benefits for a single pin, just saying.
So, yeah, it might be for a single pin,
guy,
but like not
you.
For hunting.
Yeah, have you thought about going to single pin?
Never. Not for hunting.
Just like with your eyes?
Like a single pin triple stack.
Never.
With where your eyes are at?
Yeah.
You've never thought about that?
No.
Maybe you should.
So where it's landed on me for hunting arrows, it makes me think I need...
He passed over that.
I know. He doesn't want to dive into it.
I need wide enough pin gaps that I can clearly
see,
distinguish between pins.
Because so you're going to be 20, 60, 100.
Yeah.
That's going to be your pin gap.
So that they're big enough I can see them, because right now they just all blend together because they're stacked so tight.
So you love that arrow.
I mean, I was really impressed. The thing that's a real head scratcher for me is, to me, it looks like it should be underspined. It's super lightweight, but I think what it might boil down to is just spine consistency. They might be like really consistent throughout the arrow as far as spine goes. So I think it might be a spine consistency issue. It also might be like the larger, slightly larger diameter makes it just a little bit more consistent. And maybe that's why it's flying so good at 100. It gives me a lot of confidence in the tune on my bow though.
Yeah, for sure.
And that arrow combo.
Do you feel like you just built the perfect arrow for your setup?
No, because I think it's too light.
Still, you think it's too
light? I mean, a 400, it's probably shooting like 308-309 feet per second. Like it's scooting.
You would like a little slower?
I think I would like a little slower, especially once I throw a broadhead on there. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, mathematically though, mm-hmm. there's two ways to create power: weight or speed.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much power difference
I can there tell really you.
Is. Did you do the math?
Yeah, so what I crunched the kinetic energy for the two different builds. So a 498 grain arrow going 285 feet per second is about 89 foot-pounds of kinetic energy. This arrow at 420 doing like 305 to like 309 is like 86 foot-pounds of kinetic energy. So even if it's going faster, the heavier arrow
at 285. But it's only 3 foot-pounds.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, and it's like, I mean, it's semantics. Essentially, I mean, if you're anything over, 80, 85 foot-pounds of kinetic energy, it's going to do its thing.
Weight with speed will always equal more, but speed is a way to add power.
Speed
and weight. If you're only 3,
it's really light, though. It's really super fast. The one thing I really wanted it, I thought, oh, this would be like a killer antelope arrow, mule deer arrow, I think, you know, doing 310 feet per second, you know, super tight pin gaps. But then I didn't anticipate the gaps being so tight, I actually couldn't see the pins because my eyes are so old.
And how many mule deer tags do you have this year,
Trent? No mule deer tags.
Okay, I think that answers you probably.
You will have an antelope tag though, right?
Maybe.
Maybe, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see. I didn't apply in Wyoming. I ended up not applying.
Why?
Because I just decided to wait, do it next year.
Wait for me?
Yeah.
You're the best, Trent.
Nice. He was actually so much, talking buddy. To me about it a lot. Like, do I go in? But then I kind of screw Lorenzo over.
Don't think about screwing me over.
No, it wasn't screwing you over.
Because I'm
just
happy about this year.
I know. So. I just thought, you know, I'd probably end up going up by myself, which is fine. But I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun to have like a full camp and like, go up and hunt. Yeah. And I'm not like... I mean, my kids, so my oldest kid will have 8 points. My youngest will have 1. I'll have 5 or 6 at that point. You'll have some. So I thought, you know what? Why not just like do a big camp?
Full camp. Yeah.
Yeah. Be awesome. And go have a good time. Right. So I did apply.
Where your head's at. It's great. It's a great thought.
I did a lot of, I will say like the last 2 weeks, I've probably done more strategy as far as like drawing tags this late in the game than I've done in a long time. So I applied in Idaho. So that is, as you guys are listening to this, you have today. So this has come out on the 5th. You'll have today to apply in Idaho, so I might still try to draw an Idaho antelope tag, which I applied, and I got good chances.
Yeah, there's some good chances on archery.
Yeah, antelope, there's some unlimited options. You just have to include them as your first choice. So, the unit that I picked has really good odds, but then there are guaranteed odds units. So I might pull my application and reapply. So, yeah, that's the latest though in arrow talk. I will say.
I mean, you literally can't go anywhere in the bow hunting world right now and not hear somebody say Easton 5.0. It's impossible to not hear somebody talk about it.
Or the Victory HLR.
Or that too.
Yeah, people are talking about those.
It's like everywhere you go, those are it's just constant.
Somewhere I read, and I think I've noted it a few times. I don't know if it's on other podcasts or what, but there's been this flip from like everybody wanting to shoot a 550 grain arrow at 260 feet per second to everybody's chasing speed now. So you get these 5.0s, you get the HLRs. I mean, this arrow is 8.4 grains per inch and a 300 spine. Everybody's chasing speed now. You know, everybody's shooting a 415 grain arrow to maybe 450. Seems like, which is kind of interesting. I'll probably ultimately end up landing at like 460.
So on that arrow?
No, I think what I'm going to do actually today, hopefully they've hit the dock. So I'm going to buy a dozen Victory HLR 250 spines. I'm going to put 75 grains up front, and
total, that'll put you around 460.
Total build on that will be 462, I figure. Yeah. And that should
right around 295.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like 295 ish. And it should create my pin gaps suitable enough that I can see them actually. There's all these individual things that are going into tinkering right now. But that's
I want to say too that you actually did a video a couple days ago. We published it on YouTube. So are these the best arrows of the year, Easton 5.0 versus Victory HLR? So people can check out your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know
on the Go Hunt YouTube channel.
Yeah, I don't know if they're the best. I will say these fly really good. This will probably break some hearts out there, and that's okay because I have some friends at Easton. I don't think the Easton is the toughest arrow. Like I broke one, which I was like, that shouldn't have broke. American made though, which is cool. And then also, like I said, spine consistency seems to be really good because they do fly good even at bare shafts out to 100.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's what I'm doing, tinkering. We're going to talk about this kind of stuff today. That's what I wanted to do.
Victory is kind of known as the tough one too.
Victory's tough. I've had really good luck with gold tips being pretty tough.
Gold tips. I have two on gold tips.
Yeah, gold tip has an arrow I've never shot before, which I think is interesting. The Airstrike, which is kind of their 5mm speedy arrow, you know? It's the only thing I don't like about it. Some people like it, but it's like gray. Have you ever seen that arrow?
I think I'm trying to rack my brain on it right now. I think I have.
Yeah, like
is it blue lettering?
It's I think it's like
light blue lettering.
Gold, I think. Is it gold? I want to say, and then it's got like gold accents, like gold knot collars, and then gold inserts, which is kind of funky looking. And then the actual arrow itself is gray, like a matte gray. It just
looks cool though.
Kind of. It looks weird to me.
I like the matte gray.
Yeah,
I'm a gray and orange guy. If you can't tell, you know.
Yeah, I do like the veins though. Like Q2I vein, Fusion X2, I think is a nice vein in a four fletch, but. Lots of tinkering, but that's what we're going to talk about today. I wanted to talk preseason prep.
I'm just diving in, just tinkering now. Well, next week.
Everybody, tomorrow, a lot of people have draw results that are coming out. A lot of people hitting me up in the DMs. A lot of folks that have drawn tags that are getting excited, and I know you guys have drawn some tags. Mm-hmm.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I've been thinking, here's the thing, Brady. Do you know that like when I drive down here of a morning, like it gives me actual anxiety to be like, how do I talk about this with Brady? Because like, I don't know it's what true. I can say and what I can't say.
You don't think I have anxiety? Because I'm an open book, but then I'm going to open the book to
right?
Everything else.
But I will say that like when I said alleged there, I'm slightly joking because I did make a post on my Instagram story that I didn't say the unit, but I drew but just to say the best tag in a certain state. And I actually mentioned the state on my story and I got a lot of
you
people.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I got a lot of people send me DMs like, whoa, did you get hacked? Like you're mentioning a state on your story of the tag you drew. And it's like that, in this case, I was kind of okay doing it because I'm like, I'm going to put some feelers out there.
Right.
Because it's such a phenomenal tag.
Right.
Like, and most people aren't going to ever draw it again. So it's like,
the tag quotas are so low.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, what are we doing?
So, I mean, in this case, like I've shared stuff with, you know, people who have drawn that elk tag that I had before. I've helped people out with that. So it's like, I'm willing to give information on really, really good tags because, you know, you're not really per se destroying some stuff.
So you're willing to talk a little bit today.
Talk a little bit.
You'll give up some.
Talking about great tags.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the most fun, when I drew my bighorn sheep tag in New Mexico in 2012. That was the next like 3-4 years were so fun getting calls and like talking to him about everything I saw, the rams, where the other guys were hunting, the whole, like I enjoyed.
For sure.
We'll never have that tag again. So I'm like living through them and then they're reporting back to me. It was awesome. I got 3 years out of a 1 year tag.
And then you're giving back too. You're helping other people that you're like, oh, I wish I had this information. Maybe
sending pictures of the rams that they killed, asking if I had seen that ram the year before. Cause there was one with ear tags in it, double ear tagged. It was a good ram, but it was young.
Yeah.
So I was telling them about the ram, like, hey, a year or two, this ram could be great. And they're sending me pictures of it. Mm-hmm. Like, shit, you found the same ram. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is probably the second most exciting time of the year.
Yeah.
Like I feel it's tangible. Like I feel the excitement in people building, like the number of DMs that I've got from people. Yeah, and then I see people post and, you know, you hear people talking and I get emails and everybody's excited right now. It feels like, yeah, like there's this collective, like, oh, let's
and
get
it's
it.
It's a stressed, you know, excitement. So it's like a, there's some oomph in people's, you mm-hmm. know, like they want to get moving. There's some yeah. aggression in it, which I like.
Yeah. So that's,
and people are making moves.
Yeah. And that's going to be the whole topic of discussion today. Is I wanted to pick your guys' brain on what you're actually going to do to prep and kind of where you're at. And yeah. I mean, summertime, kids are home, drive me yep. crazy. Yeah. Yours too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're gonna talk about that. I guess we got to hit some promos before we get going. Brady, do you want to hit us with Antelope Hunt promo? Kind of what's going on with it?
Yeah, so
pretty cool.
We have a.
I saw you talking about
it's
it.
Pretty cool.
You getting ready to? You gonna
I
go?
I hunted
ahead?
It last year.
That's right.
Yeah. So as you guys saw last podcast, we kind of hinted it. Now we have a little bit more details on it. So yeah, we're doing a antelope hunt giveaway with Blackhorn Guide Service for basically the month of June. That's our insider giveaway. And the one thing that I messed up on last time was the deadline to end. So all insiders automatically entered to win this antelope hunt. Just make that.
If you're an insider, you're already.
If you're an insider, you're automatically entered to win. If you're not, you have until June 24th to sign up to be eligible to win, because we're going to pull the winner June 25th because we need to know who the winners are ahead of time, because this hunt is going to be August 23rd through the 25th. So it's like a tight time frame
yeah.
to know the hunter, get everything booked, get everything dealt with so that they can go on the hunt and, you know, basically.
I like that one day, the one day turnaround.
Yeah, me yeah. too. And I like that it's a hunt this year.
Yeah, it's not
like hunt giveaways when they're a year or two away.
Sure.
It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So delayed. It's kind of weird. So we said, let's do it this year.
So you hunted there last year.
Yeah.
How was it?
So I wanted to hunt. We wanted to do a hunt with Justin Gaethje mm-hmm. and Luke Caudillo, his manager. Both really good guys. Luke has that Gladiators Unleashed hunting side. He's Gaethje's coach. I've known him for a long time. And we've always just been talking about, we need to hunt together. We need to hunt together. We need to hunt together. And our really good mutual friend is Ryan Gentry and Cole Johnson, Blackhorn mm-hmm. Guide Service, yep. two absolute studs. New Mexico is a great place to put a hunt together last minute, and a guy like Gaethje with all of his fights and how his schedule works, that we're like, let's just do that because we can make it work any dates, any time, like we'll figure this whole thing out. So that's why we decided. Well, it ended up being like, it was not what I was expecting. It was far better.
Oh yeah.
It was
in a good way.
It's awesome. Right yeah, on. It's awesome. It's one of the coolest antelope hunts I've ever been on. And, you know, not to sound like an asshole, but I've been on a lot of them, obviously. And it's like, it was awesome. The country is incredible. The amount of antelope is incredible.
Good
and
bucks.
Yeah.
Right on.
Like
frustrating number of good
yeah because everyone's like and you run into so many bucks that are just all in that like upper class
yeah
and you're just sifting through to try to find like the mega class, and so it honestly got like mind-numbing frustrating. There's so many of them.
So it'll be a good hunt.
Oh, it's so fun.
So somebody's gonna get a go. That's awesome.
So yep. fun.
And I'll also mention too, like I mentioned last time, that if you're an Insider Plus member you get 3 entries.
Yep.
Compared to the one you'll get if you're yeah. just a regular insider member. And it is a rifle hunt. So, Trail, if you were eligible to win, you would have to take a rifle.
I
can sling some lead.
I can,
I'm not going to win, by the
I
way.
I can genuinely tell ineligible. You, Cole and Ryan might get really mad at me for this, to have to deal with bow hunting. But, I mean, if there's enough antelope, if you wanted to bow hunt for a day and a half, try to get it done. And if not, gun hunt for a day and a half, yeah. you could definitely do that.
And it is an all-expense-paid hunt, so go hunt's covering all costs associated with the hunt, airfare, in and out of either Las Vegas, Nevada, or Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Nice.
And I think some of us are going to go. And we're
very
gonna
cool.
film it.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So that's a yeah.
That's the antelope giveaway.
June Insider giveaway.
The other one we want to talk about was coming up. We have our Father's Day sale, which is going to be the 9th through the 16th. Save 30% when you sign up for an Insider account using the code FD. So Father's Day 30.
FD 30?
FD 30.
What are you going to buy me, Trail?
What would I buy you? I bet you're tough to buy gifts for, actually.
Yeah. That's what I've been told. That is what I've been told.
God, that's a good one. I'm going to think about that. By the end of the podcast, I'll have something.
Something
it'll pop up.
Okay.
You know, maybe some nice Baird's beard oil would be good. You know, you got that beard coming in.
I just shaved it off, though.
I know, but you grow that out by the end of the fall, you know?
Meaning, end of today?
I'll have this growing out by the end of this month.
Like next hour?
Yeah.
By the time we're off this podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, use that promo code FD30. You get 30% off of new Insider membership. And one thing I will say is, I mean, it's a joke, but I think you're probably hard to buy for. I'm extremely hard to buy for. Yeah. Most fathers probably
are
hard to buy for. We don't necessarily want a tie. Yeah. So this is an easy one. So if you're looking for a Father's Day gift that they'll love, this would be a good one.
I agree.
Yep. What else? Oh, we want to shout out Sig. So 6 Hour is a sponsor of the podcast, and Bree has had a chance to play with some new Sigs.
I definitely did.
What do you think?
They are remarkably amazing, phenomenal windy situations, being able to glass stable on a tripod with something that has a lot of magnification.
So you said they, though.
What?
They used to
they, them.
They, them.
I said, yeah, they are phenomenal.
They are Sigs? They are Sig. Is what is it? Is it?
I hinted Sigs. It. Can you guess from my hint?
I mean, I know. I've
a lot of high magnification.
I've looked through it.
Okay.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It took me a second, if I'm being honest. It took me a second to like wrap my head around what and why and that whole thing. Because when I first saw it, I'm like, don't really know. But then you put your head around it and you're like, oh yeah, this is actually really cool.
Yeah. So to fully let the cat out of the bag, they're stabilized. It's a stabilized spotting scope.
Yeah.
So image stabilized spotter. I'm not going to say all the nitty gritty details about it, but just let you know, you can stand up and glass like a pirate.
The land pirate.
Like legit. Yeah. And I was digiscoping in New Zealand, standing up, slapping my phone
on
there.
Yeah.
Handheld.
Yeah. You can sit there and rest that thing on your knee and, or whatever, your backpack, or even just hand hold it real quick, and it's as stable as the binos are.
Yes.
It's
pretty incredible.
It's incredible.
And then when you are on a tripod in heavy wind situations, that's the other one too, where it's like, makes all the difference.
Yep. So everyone's been asking, when's it going to happen? And well, it's here.
Yeah. I was blown away.
Release date is.
It's pretty cool.
Still coming up. I'll say that, but
approaching.
It's going to be, before fall.
Yep. Is that going to go in your pack this year?
Yeah. I mean, I already did.
Yeah, but I mean.
Yeah, they're sweet.
I mean, I don't know that we're even talking about what species you're hunting, but it seems like that'd be a pretty handy tool.
To be like, that'd be a pretty good tool to have.
Because once they're live, I'll talk about use cases more, but already the use case is, all right, you have an animal that's going to like get away from you really quickly. You always want to set up your tripod. You want to be able to glass it. Your binos aren't enough magnification. You want to see what it is. Well, you could just literally grab your spotting scope out of your backpack, turn the stabilization on, handheld it, not on a tripod, and boom, you can actually zoom in and judge an animal really quick before it gets away.
Yes.
That's pretty, it's pretty awesome. Freaking cool.
That's what I kept thinking is like, how many times do you pick up a buck or a bull and it's like moving through cover, or it's just like almost on the edge, and you're like, shit, I got like maybe 30 seconds to get a quick look at it, and you're trying to just scramble and throw your spotting scope on the tripod.
And let me just throw this in. Why always in that situation? Inevitably, you do get set up in time, but only in time to watch them go away from you into a tree, and they look giant every time.
Every time.
Why does that happen?
And you're just about
scenario?
To take your phone and like
every
slap it on
time.
There?
Why does that happen?
I don't know. Those big animals don't.
It's just like they give you that 1 second,
sometimes,
but then they're gone.
Sometimes it's like legit half a second, and you're like, I don't know.
Did I see what I just thought I saw?
I don't know. Was that a kicker? Yeah. Was that a branch? What was that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty great use case scenario for those just quick glimpses.
Yeah.
And then if you want to take a longer look, throw that thing on a tripod.
Yeah, and a little bit of wind or any random vibrations.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I really like about it.
A little bit of wind. No biggie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it cuts it down and makes the digiscope footage a lot smoother. And I noticed too a lot when like the tar was moving back and forth on the mountainside and I was digiscoping, I literally could take my tripod head and pan. And it was like I was on like a movie. It's not getting like skips or whatever, because like it's leveling it, smoothing out all the footage as you're moving around, following an animal as it's walking through the landscape. So I thought that was really cool
too.
But you can't do it on a normal spotter.
They're always doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Adding cool tools to make it fun out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool.
Hopefully Sig won't get mad.
Be all right.
Yeah.
We'll just...
I'll try to be covert at the beginning.
What's
just
that
to
saying?
Cover it.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, seems like...
As you grow up, you realize that's definitely the way to live life. Yeah.
Cool. So where are we at? Where are you guys at as far as preseason stuff?
I got one more thing.
Oh, we can hit it in a minute. I know. Are you talking the unit? Unit?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unit? Why would I say unit?
No, I thought you were talking about like unit commenting. So we have this.
No.
I was going to talk about it when we talk about scouting, but go ahead. Run with it. Whatever you got.
Okay. You can go. This is not about scouting, but it kind of is.
Okay. Run.
Can I run it?
Yep.
Okay. I just want to let people know about the Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissioners meeting coming up on Friday, June 13th. So there's one big thing that I'll discuss here, and you can submit comments. There'll be an article you check out on Go Hunt, obviously, about all this. But basically what it's going to do is remove the delineation between different types of trail cameras for prohibited use of different times of year. And it'll make it unlawful to use any type of trail camera from July 1st to December 31st. So currently it is July 1st to December 31st for cell cameras, ones that transmit images and video directly to your wherever home, and then August 1st to December 31st. So basically it's going to make, no matter what kind of trail camera it is, July 1st to December 31st, they're banned.
Which essentially...
You're not going to get any buck photos.
Yeah. Like pre-July 1st, it doesn't even matter.
Yep.
How do you feel about it?
For people who like to run trail cameras, I think it stings. And we'll discuss it later. I'm going to run cameras this year, just because of the tag I drew. But, yeah, I mean,
would you rather they just ban it all together like Arizona did?
I don't know. I don't know what the right thing to do is.
I mean, the July 1st is essentially a full ban. Like, it's not even worth it. What are you going to go hang them up June to June 30th? Like, yeah, it doesn't even matter.
I mean, to me, it's just like, if you're going to do that, why don't you just get rid of them all together?
Yeah.
That's the intent. Did they give any kind of indication as to why? Is there any discussion as to?
No, it's going to be up for discussion right now. So, I mean, they're going to talk about the, you know, all of it probably on the table on that meeting. But it was May 21st, the document looking at memorandum where they brought it up, and then it's going to be covered under the June 13th discussion. It's basically the Emerging Technology Committee report kind of brought this up. So it's probably some, maybe people, you know, working for NDAO, game wardens, and then maybe a public input as well that probably put it in the ear that they should maybe do something on this. So it's just going to be up for a discussion for a possible action on that day. So
what do you think about trail cameras? I mean, Arizona banned them all together.
Yep.
Utah. You know, Utah has a season now. Like, you have to have them pulled by August 1st, so you can run them through the summer, in the spring, I guess, if you want to. But, and I think the discussion largely is that they are unfair, not fair chase. What do you guys think?
And then the other argument on top of that, besides the fair chase, is it displaces animals during times of year when they need water. Because everyone throws cameras on water. And
people
so
are checking them?
People checking them all throughout the day, and all of a sudden bucks keep getting kicked off water sources, and they don't get actually water, or rams or whatever it may be. I've heard that thrown around a lot too. So that's the other side of wildlife.
Do you have any kind of feeling of your own?
For people who like to run cameras, and maybe that's the only thing they have to do. They can't go out and scout all the time, but they're like, hey, I'm going to go hike around, put some cameras out. I like checking them, like showing my kids, get a chance to get outdoors, look at photos. I feel for them. Good for those people. But at the same time, like, I dislike the competition, people stealing it, people smashing your cameras, people taking your cards out.
That whole side sucks.
Yeah, sure. And then you have everyone's seen it, the photos of, you know, 30 trail cameras on one water source, like... Okay.
What do you think of the effectiveness of using trail cameras to scout? And we'll take the Midwest and the East out of it, because inevitably
that is
scouting. Yeah. But like specific to mule deer, elk, antelope.
I'm running trail cameras this year, and the only reason I want to run them is to see where a buck potentially might be in an area. Because obviously I have to pull the camera August 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And my hunt's not till October. So that intel is null and void for the most part for like, okay, I'm not going to kill a buck right here off this water source because I'm not a bow hunter. But like if you're a bow hunter and you could run cameras all through the hunting season, sure, then it's going to actually create a legit advantage for you if you could run them all the way through the month of August during your archery hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're going to know exactly what water source they're hitting, what time they're hitting, all that stuff. So it is taking out some of that technological advantage per se. But I'm not going to use it to directly try to kill, but I'm going to maybe know there's a buck in the area, but obviously the buck can move a wide swath of land and might not be able to find them.
I think they definitely help you find animals. And finding an animal or, you know, a buck or a bull of that caliber, I think less so for elk because they just move so damn much unless you've got like a really early tag or maybe like a really late tag.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they're that all that effective for elk. I don't know. It'd be interesting if you've...
I don't think they're that effective.
If you've killed a bull out there that you trail cameraed and you use a trail camera, I'd love to know because it just seems like they move so damn much.
I'm sure it happens, but just think about the amount that didn't compared to the ones who did.
Yep.
Elk just do move.
I've definitely used them for antelope, and I've definitely used them for deer.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put them on a wallow, couldn't you? Once they're starting to hit wallows.
Use so many different wallows.
Yeah, but they just move so damn much during the rut.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can walk up to a wallow and see if there's elk hitting it. Like you kind of...
Literally,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'll know. I don't know that it's that effective for elk hunting, but I would say I've definitely killed bucks that I wouldn't have killed.
Because of a trail cam?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say killed. I wouldn't have probably found them.
Yeah.
Right? If you can like pinpoint, especially early, like you're saying, but if you can pinpoint a buck to an area early, you know, and it's not going to kill them. You're not going to kill them from a trail camera, but you might put you in the right area.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of variables with the trail cameras, like a ton. The pressure on the animals and people checking trail cameras, and you know, not everybody is ultra respectful of roads going in and maybe driving trucks further than they should, and it's putting pressure on animals, displacing them away from the water, and there's only so much water in the desert, which is primarily where majority of the trail cameras work and are. I get that. I think that's one variable to solve for. And I understand, like, you know, essentially banning or getting people off of the landscape July 1st when it's hot. And then all the way through, but it essentially makes a trail camera pointless.
Useless.
Yeah. But then the other side of it, though, too, is I think banning trail cameras, more so than anything, it pinches the average Joe every day or weekend warrior, average Joe hunter. Like now, your competitive advantage when you like
you can't be outclassing.
Yeah, even me, right? And I have more time than the average Joe, but just use me for an example. I don't have time to just go, and it's only it's not that far away from here where I'm hunting. Like it's not far at all, but I still don't have the time with business and family and everything else I have going on through the summer to
it's
like
not your full-time job.
It's not my job.
Yeah.
But guess what? It is other people's job. Sure. So my way to compete with them was through a trail camera. Cause I could hang trail cameras, run it on the times that I could have an idea. Let's say 25% of the puzzle put together just based on a picture, whereas an outfitter might have 75% because they have the picture and they spent the time with their people to actually go find transition, bedding, all the other stuff. Now the only other 25% they got to do is actually kill it. I still have what's left, but at least I have a starting point to compete with them.
So
without trail cameras, like it being in my situation, let alone somebody who can't even get up there as much as I could, like you really are, you're wiped out now on being able to compete.
Yeah. Do you think,
does that, you know what I mean?
I agree.
That's the thing I don't like about banning of the trail cams is not everybody can afford the $15,000 outfitter or wants to hunt with an outfitter for that. Yeah. Like there's a lot of those people and now though we can't even compete.
I also hate the what's next to get banned type of thing. Like
the,
what more regulations do you need where you can't use, you know, a rangefinder in this time of year, or you can't do that. Like what else is it, you know, is going to come from it?
Do you agree?
I agree. Yeah. I actually, this is like one thing. I think August 1st is okay. Like sure. You're going to open your archery hunts in some states like Nevada. You're going to open the 10th. Like, I think that's fine. I don't know. I have the same type of feeling. Like I think the dramatics of it. So this like widespread panic that like, hey, there's a lot of people out on the landscape and they're running 500 trail cameras and they're all on water holes and they're checking them day and night all day. You know, these elk and deer can't even get a drink. I think it's probably over dramatized in my opinion. I don't know for a fact, but to me, it seems like overly dramatic, right? I think there's probably some water holes in some states like Nevada, obviously super dry, right? So most of your cameras, you're gonna throw those on a water hole, right? And there probably are some water holes that get quite a number of cameras, but I don't know that it's like to the level that I think that you're like constantly harassing wildlife.
I would agree.
I might be wrong. Maybe people prove me wrong.
Could you say the same thing then, that shed hunters are harassing animals going on the landscape every single day too?
I feel kind of the same way about shed hunters to some extent.
Because people say they do and some people say they don't. I mean,
well, there's just, this, like, also,
everyone else is hiking around the same time.
There's this widespread panic that there's like a billion shed hunters on the landscape. Like, I know the most hardcore shed hunters I know, like, they're out there and I know probably 20 of them, 30 of them. I know a bunch of weekend warders that might get a day or two here and there. And most of those guys aren't finding anything. I think it's like with social media and the internet in general now, it just like gets pushed at you so quickly and with so much force by a few that it becomes like the accepted norm. Like, oh, there are a shit ton of cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there are a billion shed hunters all across the entire landscape. I might be wrong. But that's the gut feeling that I got.
Here's the thing with variable, right? Like, variables are hard to solve for.
Sure.
And you inevitably have to like decide, is the juice worth the squeeze on either side of what this variable is? Is it happening where cameras are getting checked and people are driving in and animals are getting pushed off of water? I'm sure that has happened. Has it happened with shed hunters where they push an animal with vehicle, get them to jump a fence and hopefully drop their
horns? Or just bump them in general.
I'm sure it happens, right? But does it happen enough to, on the camera conversation, does it happen enough to take away the competitive advantage for the average Joe weekend warrior who can't afford the outfitter? Is it happening enough to take that away from him and his kids and the experience? And he finally does draw a once in a lifetime tag and wants to run cameras and get the full experience, and he's legally not allowed to.
Yeah.
Like, is it happening enough to take that away from somebody? And the slippery slope variable too of like, okay, what's next? That's what's hard about the whole thing is I can see, you see both sides of it.
Yeah.
But what's the answer on like, is it happening enough to take this away from
people? And even if they did ban them completely during those times and like, oh, you're displacing wildlife by checking your cameras on water sources, you could say the same thing if they banned them. It could have the same amount of traffic to water sources because you would still want to go walk to that water source.
Yeah,
look for fresh tracks.
Prints.
See if there's a big buck print in there.
Yeah, and check the way they're entering and exiting.
Yeah, maybe I can figure out stuff. So you're still going to have that pressure no matter what of people wanting to go walk and check out water sources, especially for archery, to put, you know, blinds nearby or whatever, or figure out where they can glass from to look at some stuff. So like, you're still going to have that. And you might have that to the same level as you would if it wasn't trail cameras.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah. There's part of me, like, with Arizona banning trail cameras, and you hear a lot of talk like, oh, it's going to put the hunt back in the strip, right? So now you've got no cameras, so there's not every single buck is known about and named. You know, it put the hunt back in it. I get it. I understand, you know, kind of the sentiment of it. I mean, I think those bigger bucks are still getting found. People are out there with guides and outfitters.
If you're a premier outfitter,
yeah, you know where it's at.
And you get the legislation of cameras are banned. If I'm a premier outfitter, I am in my house celebrating. Like, hell yes, dude.
Yeah,
let's go.
Because I'm out there.
Like, this is my job. I'm out there. I'll know every buck, and average Joe is going to know maybe one of my five.
Yeah.
And get lucky to find them.
I don't have a problem with trail cameras though. Like, I mean, the way Utah runs it, you know, you've got till August 1st. I'm okay with that. I didn't have a problem with it when it was year round. Like, they let you run trail cameras. Mm-hmm. I didn't really care about that.
That actually brings up another point that I forgot that I wanted to make. That's how my brain works these days, is I can forget things as quick as I use it. Is think about the amount of information we have learned on wildlife through trail cameras. And that, I think that's the side of this thing that nobody ever really talks about. But like, the amount of information we have gathered and learned on each individual species of animal with all these public trail cameras out there that's not costing the state any money, the DWRs any money, like all that stuff. And think about like, oh, this camera caught a jaguar in Arizona,
a wolverine
in California. This is the Utah. I can't remember when, but it's back when my uncle was running a ton of trail cams down there on the bench and all that. They did a count on how many does had dual fawns, had twin fawns. And it was like, for whatever reason, there was more there than whatever. And they studied, I guess, some of the feed purpose and everything. And it turns out there was more protein, and that's why they think they're so
throwing
feed
twins.
Thing. Yeah. This is like 15, 20 years ago or something like that. So you think about those things we've learned because of public trail cameras.
I don't think, I mean, I've only got, I probably have four or five trail cameras that I ran over the years, and I'm probably checking those like once a month, maybe. Maybe if I'm lucky, like every 3 weeks, if that.
That is me in my, the boat that I'm in, if I've run cameras, which I will this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like once every 3 weeks, best case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really just looking for, you know, one photo of one buck that are, that I'm like, yeah, that's a buck I would like to hunt. And then, and
would you say that's 25% of the puzzle? Like at most 25% of that puzzle?
Of actually killing it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah, I mean,
I feel. It's really not that much.
The buck is there, which is great.
I've loved
to kill of every buck that I've ever got a trail camera.
Yeah.
I think I've killed like 3 or 4 that I've got photos of that I hunted my absolute ass off for.
Yeah.
But it's actually killing them, though.
It's such a small amount of information that you gather.
It really is just knowing they exist.
They're somewhere.
Somewhere.
Within a 20-mile radius of this.
And then it depends on timing, right? I mean, like Brady was saying, if his permit's an October permit, it's much less valuable if he gets a photo in August or July come October.
And then even though it's not going to be really that valuable, it's still going to be cool. But I kind of want the photos too. I kind
of
want
the
that
experience of it.
I want to be able to look at it, watch some bucks grow. Like that experience to me is pretty unique. And I don't feel like you should take that.
That was part of my experience talk. Is like, you drew this tag, you'll probably never draw it again. Mm-hmm. I'll never draw this tag that I have again either.
Right.
I want to make it a month long tag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. And legally, I possibly would not have the ability to do that. It stings. It sucks.
So to cut this short, I'll definitely be writing my comment and submitting it that I do not believe they should be banned July 1st to December 31st for all types of trail cameras.
Are you okay with current then, August?
I'm okay with current.
Okay.
I still wish maybe people could probably run them a little bit longer, but it's okay.
I think you should be able to run them longer.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I think winter range, coming off the rut, like all that stuff, maybe just to get people off the landscape. Mm-hmm. If that really is your argument, you know, we're kicking them off of waters, we're putting pressure on them. Okay, well, then let's do that when they need the pressure off them.
Yeah.
May to August 1st, you'd be okay with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have any issues with it. I generally don't have that many issues with it.
Yeah, so. Me either.
I think I have like 3 or 4 trail cameras to my name, and they're all from like way back in the day.
Yeah.
So see, like,
I think that's most people. I think I mean, there are definitely people I know that have a lot of cameras and they run like a full trap line, if you will, for cameras. And I get that, but it's the exception rather than the norm. Most people I know have got 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. You know, if
that.
My plan this year is to run 12 cameras.
Yeah.
And that's like a massive camera string compared to what I've ever done.
Yeah, you'll be 2 days checking.
Correct. Yeah. But it's because the area is so big.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's in the desert.
Yeah.
But there's an insane amount of water.
Yeah.
So that's the tough part.
Yep.
So my plan is to run 12 cameras.
That's a good discussion. It's a good lead in to kind of like what, so you guys have got some permits. I've got permits. We kind of have a widely different, schedules. So you've got some different species. I'm like Brady said early on in the podcast, all I've got is elk tags right now. So I'm mostly just focused on elk and elk hunting. But where are you at right now? We're in June, which is hard to believe.
Yeah.
What are you doing right now?
I'm stressed. Like beyond stressed.
You are.
Yeah.
What's the most stressful? Like what is the stress that's weighing on you? Like, is it getting your weapon ready? Is it finding an animal? Is it time away from family and work? Like, what's stressing you the most?
Finding the animals that are, because this is the blessing and a curse of drawing the tag you've always wanted, right? It's like, okay, well, now everything is just ratcheted up on expectation. And not just, I'm not at all just talking expectation of animal. I'm talking expectation of just the hunt itself, the experience. So the expectation of how prepared I'm going to be for myself, like the expectation I put on myself for that, how prepared I'm going to be and proficient with the weapon, how all that stuff, right? It's like, if you have this tag, you might as well, you better be your best when you're going into this tag you've ever wanted.
Brady, do you know what I told Lorenzo?
What?
I said, because he told me he was stressed, and I said, this is not even a big deal. It's not even an elk tag.
he did say, I can show you the text.
It literally doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, just
enjoy it. It's not even an elk tag.
I was like, let me just take that, all that stress off your back. It's not even an elk tag, so what are we talking about?
Yeah, that is true, and I can prove that.
We're talking about practice?
But like, yeah, that's, I don't know, I'm getting... honestly, the full stress, which is going to sound dumb, and I fully get that, because
I don't think it sounds dumb at all,
because I've finally drawn this tag that mm-hmm. I've always wanted. But I'm also like, I'm training a puppy right now to get back into waterfowl. I've been out of waterfowl for 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I got a lot to pick up on and practice.
If you had a hot lead on a buck,
yeah,
or a bull,
yeah,
would that take some of it off you? Or would it add to it?
If I had a hot lead on 3 bucks, it would take
some stress off. So finding right now.
Yeah.
Finding the animal that you want to hunt.
The scouting and hunt plan being efficient. Because gotcha. Right now I have so many things going on in my life with mm-hmm. kids out of school and all the sports camps. And I don't want to miss that. Mm-hmm. Like we're doing the UNLV football camp. It's my son's first time. Like, and he's going to go be around college football players, and it's all, I don't want to miss that.
Sure.
Yeah. Sound right. Like, yep. So I have those types of things going on throughout the summer. I got a family vacation. Who doesn't take a family vacation during the summer?
I know.
I have one right in the middle of when I want to be running cameras.
I should say my family takes a vacation.
You don't. Your family does.
I stay home.
Which I need to learn how to do that, especially on a year like this.
I wouldn't recommend it.
I'm wrapped into a family vacation, primetime scouting. I have sports camps, rather. Yeah. I'm locked into these.
So what are you doing?
Waterfowl trying to get ready for. I still got some things I need to do with camo. Camo still needs to be gun broke, still needs to be e-collar trained. Like, you know, there's a lot going on.
Sure. So what are you doing though? Like what is it right now that Lorenzo's doing to maximize the potential of this permit?
What I'm doing right now is I am not a good networker at all. Like that, I'm not, that's not me. We talked about that on the podcast one time, that if we were all animals, we'd all be mule deer. We just kind of like go on our own, don't bother us, that kind of people.
Yeah.
I have tried to come out of my shell as best as possible.
Okay. And
like, I've started a network, which is so painful for me, but I know I need to do it.
So you're reaching out to people that know the unit?
And hunted it last year and trying to get names of people. I've never done that before. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to go that path just to get an idea of like carryover and like what places are overrun. I've never hunted this tag myself. I've never hunted this tag during the archery season. Mm-hmm. I've been to this area on other people's hunts in late season, but I've never been out here. I've never hunted this spot in August.
Gotcha.
This entire unit in August. I've never stepped foot there in August. Mm-hmm. So like, that's pretty stressful on me too, is mm-hmm. I've never seen where the deer are, what they're doing. I'm sure just based on experiences, it's not going to be hard to put two and two together. Like once you're there, right? Like,
yep.
So one scouting trip, which is, I do have one planned at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
That'll probably take a lot of stress off me once I get back from that and have seen some deer and seen, you know, like got some lay of it.
So would it be accurate to suggest that you're putting right now time and effort into networking?
Yes. E-scouting.
E-scouting. Map
Lots
work.
Lots of e-scouting.
Lots of map work.
I feel like Brady right now.
Lots of map work. Mm-hmm. Identifying areas. Mm-hmm. Maybe potentially talking about, you know, bucks or bulls that might have made it, that might be in certain areas.
Yep.
And then putting together.
I have a picture of a buck.
Okay.
That made it.
Right.
Okay. That made me feel better.
Right.
And then the area that he came from.
And then putting a plan together to like get some cameras out.
Yes.
Also do some scouting, some glassing.
Yeah.
Get into June.
So getting the cameras out, which I'm going to try to do. I leave this week. Brother's 40th. Got a roll old brother.
You got 40 is a big one.
40th birthday.
It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, right.
If you listen to this.
Yeah. So I leave this week. When I get back the next weekend, I'm going to hang cameras.
Okay.
I'm going to let those soak till mid-July. So about a month.
Yep.
4 weeks. When I go do that, I'm going to scout as well, but nothing's going to have enough horn to like actually know what the hell's going on. But at least you're going to see.
It's going to piss you off is what it's going to do.
Exactly. Yes,
that's exactly what happens. When you see a buck in June, it's like, it might be big, it might be small, maybe. But I'm just pissed off.
He has great bases, but I have no idea. Because
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then let those cameras soak to mid-July.
Mm-hmm.
Get one scouting trip mid-July. This is my overall plan right now. One scouting trip mid-July. That one I'm hoping takes all the stress off me and it becomes fun. Mm-hmm. Like based on the cameras, the scouting, the this, the that, the networking, all these things I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to go up 3 days before the hunt.
Okay.
That's my plan.
It's a good plan.
Sorry for the very long-winded answer, but yeah, I just it'll be got interesting a lot to see.
So I think a lot of it will depict on what you end up turning up with a trail camera and then your scouting trip.
Uh-huh.
It could be like...
So I have three scouting trips planned.
Right.
And maybe I sneak in some more.
Yep.
Depending. But I have three planned. One that's really not going to matter in June. It's just to hang cameras more so. Mm-hmm. One that's going to like follow up on the cameras and be a good scouting session. And then 3 days before the hunt.
The third week of July, you'll either be ecstatic and super excited or you will be stressed beyond belief.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good plan. That's good.
That's me.
Yeah. You working on anything in regards to like getting your bow set up, dialed in, anything like that that you're thinking of?
It could be famous last words here, but that is what I'm least stressed about.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I can shoot 53 yards in my backyard
mm-hmm.
anytime I want. And I do a lot.
Right.
And that's like one of the things that I don't ever stop doing. Maybe I don't do it as much as like I will start here picking up.
Yep. It's so interesting to dive into other people's mindset on what they're doing and when and why.
Yeah.
It's and the species, because they're all different.
Yeah. But I've said it before on the podcast too. I'm not a huge practicer either.
Yeah.
Like I'm a every
consistent
2-3 days
because mm-hmm.
I'm not speaking for everybody, but I start like trying to change things and picking up bad habits and mm-hmm. I'll shoot like every 3-4 days
yep.
and make sure I'm still good and comfortable and process and all that stuff. So I'm not overly stressed there because I can just shoot in my backyard.
That's good, man. Good stuff.
Maybe famous last words there, but
I don't know. See. That's good stuff. How much of, and then we'll move to Brady because I don't know what he's doing. But
yeah, I'm interested on Brady too, because he has so much time.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you though, like killing a big buck or a big bull, what percentage of prep time or weight do you put in the weapon and actually executing the shot, getting there versus just finding them and knowing where to be and when? Does that question make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. But it's an interesting question to answer because the stress of finding the animal, where to be, when to be there, all that stuff it takes more like actual work.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting my bow is enjoyable and not stressful, but I do that I do it every 3-4 days,
mm-hmm.
which
Because you can. Yeah, and you have to.
And
you
should. It's fun, mm-hmm. and it's enjoyable, and it feels good to know you're proficient, and that's where the confidence comes from. Like, when you hit the field, it's like, oh, all I need to do is see this buck.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get to 70, like, I'm good.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, having that confidence in your head, I love that. But that's, like, the enjoyable part of the process to me. The real work side is balancing work, family.
Sure.
Getting ready, all this stuff, finding the animal, making sure the plan's good. Because what I do understand about this hunt and have really good intel on is I've got like 5-6 days to really make it happen if I find some animals that I want to go after. Because after 5-6 days of pressure, everything's going to reshape.
Change. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question, and I see both sides of the fence, right? So it's like, I will say, like, if you can't find the animals or so you can't stressful. Find the animal that you want to hunt, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't really matter how accurate you are with your bow, right? Yeah. Like, you can shoot lights out day in and day out at your local range.
But if you don't have the one to go.
If you don't know where to be and when and how to actually...
It's all for naught.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
And then on the flip side of it, if you do all the prep work, you do all the scout time, you know where the animal's at.
And you're not overly confident and you have that little thing in the back of your head, like, that's like, ooh,
shit, I don't know if I can hit it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you're shaking like a leaf because you don't know exactly where your pin is at. You know, you're like, yeah, I think this is close to where my 50 yard pin should be. Like, then you don't have the confidence to actually execute and make shot.
Correct.
I think Lorenzo wasn't
that here. Was actually really well said. It's totally correct.
Well, I think
correct.
About it a lot.
Yeah. I think Lorenzo missed the podcast that you and I did solo where we rank those top five things in order. And I put like shooting way down the list. And I was very surprised, but I was basically explaining the same thing. Like I'd rather have all the intel, know where all the animal is, exactly know it in and out, have all the woodsmanship, have all the skills of this is where the animal's at this time here. This is why he's there. And I'm going to go in and kill him because like, I know I have the shooting skills to lean back on. So everything else I want to front load. Cause like, I can't kill a giant buck if I don't know where a giant buck lives.
Correct.
I could be the best shot and ever. Like,
it's just the way time and effort and all that stuff breaks down. We can go shoot 365 days a year.
Yeah.
But to go find the animal you want for the tag you have is such a condensed timeline.
Small window.
So it's like those priorities shift. Like right now, the priorities shift to scouting, focusing on that, and less so shooting.
It seems like the real assassins that I know are putting way more time and effort into scouting, finding, knowing where to be. And they're probably not, they're not winning local 3Ds. They're not winning national archery shoots. Like they're good. They're decent shots. Definitely enough to like get it done in crunch time. But I don't think that they're not out winning your ASA circuit, which is interesting.
Some people have given me shit for saying it, but I genuinely believe it. Like I don't care how I shoot as long as from any position, 70 yards and in, I can hit a white paper plate. That's all I care about. Like if I can hit a white paper plate from kneeling, from weird situations, from contorted body situations, all that stuff, 70 yards and in, I know it's like a fairly big dot you're going after, but that's all I care about.
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, I think people should do both, but you can't do everything. And like, if you got a Saturday in the second week of July and you're like, man, I could sleep in the Saturday, run up to my local range, shoot my bow, shoot bear shafts out to 100.
Yeah.
Or I could go up on the hill and look for deer or elk.
Go up on the hill.
Yeah, you should probably go up on the hill. Yeah, because that's the stuff that I think ends up paying off in the long run.
I agree.
Yeah. Brady, what are you doing? Let's dive into Brady Miller.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I'm really interested.
What
on
are you
your
doing
plan.
Right now, Brady Miller?
Well, I'll first start off by answering the first question you tossed to Lorenzo, like, how are you feeling? And so leading up to, obviously, we're talking. I mean,
this is like a therapy session.
Yeah, I said it before. So I'll say it now because you guys like me talking. Like when the Nevada draw results came out, I was feeling really calm up until the moment shit started hitting the fan when I got a credit card ding. And I was like, oh, it's from Endow for $31, which is a deer tag. And I only put in for what I consider the best.
Can I just say $31 for a deer tag?
I know it's stupid.
I have voiced
I have voiced to Endow that we need to increase it.
I think it's great, but $31, I'm like,
it is
wow.
Great, but it's also not though.
It's not.
We're
it's
so
not.
Endow is so underfunded.
I'm like,
we're so
$31. I can't put half a tank of gas in my truck for $31.
They have not touched their fees in what 22
yeah
years,
we had them in
years?
Here at the office a couple years ago. We all said they should increase it,
and not like grossly like some of these other states have.
Sure.
But I mean, if you're underfunded and you guys are and things are suffering, like let's figure it out. Let's make it fair for the hunters and the animals.
Yeah,
like 31 is kind of unfair to the animals with what they're dealing with right now.
Yeah, and like you said, not like the other states. Like as a resident, I feel like residents should be, you know,
treated
but paying their decent fare.
I mean, my dad drew an elk tag in Utah. It was like $330 or something like that, which I'm like,
For an elk? Yeah.
For an elk, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, for a resident elk tag, I felt okay about it. You
if
know?
It was $150.
Yeah, if our deer tags were $100, $120, like
I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but when I hear 31, it's sticker shock in the opposite direction.
Correct.
I'm like, wow.
No, correct.
That's incredible value. Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
So I was calm until that point. And then I realized, wow, I might have just drew what I consider one of the top five, you know, places in Nevada. And then I'm trying to log into the count, and it's not letting me log in to see applications to see what I drew. But I can go into the receipt section, and this one made me even more stressed out. So I go into the receipt section. It says, oh, yeah, you drew a deer tag, $30 deer tag, $1 processing fee. But it shows your season dates. So it said, you know, my mm-hmm. October season dates, but it did not show me again what unit it was. So I'm like, okay, I drew a rifle tag. Sweet. And I put a couple of rifle tags, a lot of Muzzy units on there. So I kind of narrowed it down a little bit and I'm still stressed out. Then I finally found out what I drew. And I think,
Which is your number one choice.
I drew my first choice. So arguably what I consider the best unit in Nevada for a rifle tag that I've always wanted. And I drew it. And then it's just like stress, nervousness, overload from that point on to even right now. I'm very nervous and excited.
Because I don't think I've ever drawn a tag of that magnitude to where I'm like,
and so here's the crazy
thing. I've drawn some elk tags places where I was excited, but I wasn't like, this is the best unit in the best state. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or this is the best deer tag. So
here, but though, why it's adding on to my stress level. So like everyone, I mean, most people should know that even though you draw a really great tag, does not guarantee success. Does not guarantee I'm going to kill a 215 inch deer. Does not at all. I have had one of these tags before, which is crazy. I drew the best tag. I'm not gonna say the unit, the best tag in the state of Montana for mule deer when I was a resident there.
I don't know if that's comparable, but go. It's keep,
not, no,
keep
I'm, going. I'm not trying to compare it across state lines. I know, but there's 220 bunch bucks killed there all the time too.
Okay,
I'm saying the best mule deer tag
much
in
fewer,
that state.
But yes.
Yes. Okay. Fair
Way
enough.
Way fewer, but yes.
Yeah, I'm tracking.
You don't know why you're trying to compare them across state lines, but
I'm thinking about. You know, if I drew the best deer tag in the state of Montana, and I drew the best deer tag or one of the best deer tags in the state of Nevada, I feel wildly different about those two experiences.
But they're still comparable. That's still like, that's everyone's dream who lives there to draw that tag.
Sure.
And still, like, people who draw odds, it's the same.
Fair enough.
If I drew an Oregon tag that was the best mule deer tag, I'd still be jacked on it because it's the best unit, best state, or best unit in that state for
we had species. We had a fun game. Like when I found out, I just kept like, we were on our way to New Zealand. On the way back, maybe. I can't remember, but I was just like, would you rather have this
or that
or that? Yeah. This or that? Yeah. Like I was trying to figure out what level is this? What bar is it?
Yeah. So
I would imagine there's very few you would rather have.
Not many.
Found a few,
but not many.
And then so the crazy, that why it's adding more stress is I'm talking about drawing a sick tag in a state is not a guarantee of a giant animal or killing an animal. Is I ate that tag in Montana. Mm. I elected to hunt it hard and pass up a bunch of deer because I wanted the biggest deer of my life. And I had the best chance to, at that point, kill the biggest deer of my life. So I ate it. So I ate a really great tag before. And now it's like, okay, I don't want it to happen twice. Like I want to go all in and make sure that doesn't happen by doing all the work I can. So that day I spent literally, that was the start of a Memorial Day weekend. And luckily we had like a slight work from home, slight day off. And I went ham on maps that day.
So that was your first step?
First step. I went ham on maps. I pulled it up, started doing a bunch of e-scouting, pulled it up my computer, 3D, terrain analysis, going ham.
And what are you looking for?
Everything. I'm just doing big picture to zoom. I'm just zoom. Like I talk about when I'm doing these e-scouting like tips videos, I'm just zooming around, looking at every ridge, every little spot I can access, just trying to get a picture for what the terrain looks like. I don't know where the bucks are. You know, I don't know what's going to be good or not. I'm just looking at it. I'm just checking things out. I want to get an assessment of, you know, what I'm going to be dealing with when I get in the ground. And maybe I'm dropping a few waypoints here and there.
On what?
Just glassing knobs, water sources, access points, place I can drive my truck, turning spots, just like puking a bunch of data onto the screen at first. It might get wiped away later when I go east or boots on the ground scouting, but right now I'm just generalizing, marking stuff and actually color coding them the right way and adding the icons the right way. So I'm starting to get a visual of, okay, here's places I think I can glass. Here's places that are water sources. Here's places that maybe I can put a trail camera. Here's places that's super remote that might have water. I don't know. I'm gonna go check it out. And at the same time, like Renzo was saying, I was starting to put little feelers out there to people and I never reach out to people.
You're putting out feelers?
Yeah.
So it's so hard to get to do that.
And I hate doing it too, because you're bugging someone first of all, and you're asking them like, hey, you know, I know you've been here before. Are you willing to give up any intel? And you know, I find it kind of feels dirty to me asking, because like, I don't know, even though it's a covered spot.
I agree. But then I put myself in when I would get the calls about that sheep tag.
Exactly.
And I liked it. I enjoyed it. So then I'm like, these guys will get more out of their tag, you know?
Yeah, like that college kid I helped who drew the same elk tag I had. Like he shot his biggest bull of his life, and that was the coolest thing ever, because he's like was struggling, and I gave him a bunch of spots, and You killed the bull.
Yeah, so that it gave you cool. more experience out of your tag.
Yeah, it's cool. It was super cool to see. And then the photos you sent later and all that stuff, like that was cool. But like still, you think like, okay, I'm going to reach out to people and basically ask for some, you know, little nuggets here and there.
Dirty little secrets.
Yeah. So I started doing that. I started, you know, luckily some of these people were willing to give me a few waypoints. So I started putting them on a map as well. So I had like, okay, here's some ideas of a little bit more intel. So then I start fine tuning my data a little bit more. Okay. So if here's some spots potentially to check out, why they say they check it out. There weren't like exact, like, hey, glass here, there's a buck right there. It's just like, here's a general area. So it's like, okay, general area. I appreciate general area. If you want to give me exact glassing spots, that'd be great too. But I started figuring, okay, where can I glass from? Where's, you know, just narrowing it down further again, do that same process over and over again leading up to it. And so I think I spent that day 3 hours, maybe 4 hours.
So a lot of e-scouting.
And then at one point I had to leave my computer and go do something else with my girlfriend. And then I had my phone out the whole time and I was e-scouting then on the phone.
That's the Brady I know.
Yeah, like I was like, well, we're here doing this, but we're not really doing anything important. So I just busted out my phone and started going ham.
Like the prevention to you, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I started just diving around, you know, checked out UniProfile, out UniProfile comments.
Mm-hmm.
Searching the web, doing a lot of that. I knew a bunch
searching
of
forums,
social, all that stuff. Looking at previous bucks that have been killed that I know of that were actually in that unit. Like they didn't say, but
YouTube.
No YouTube yet.
No. You ever do that? Look at YouTube.
Yeah.
Just a random YouTube search.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
For the species in the unit, see what pops up.
Correct.
Yeah. I do that. Can I ask you? So in turn, I think e-scouting is super important. Obviously, I think it's one of the first steps. And like I said earlier, it's always interesting on people's approach and like how they take it. Because my first approach is like network.
Yeah.
It's probably because I'm from Utah.
And that you guys do have this just underground thing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's this stupid thing where we don't really care. We'll just reach out to anybody blindly. But I do a lot of network, and so I'll reach out to people and just say, hey, ever been in this area? What do you know? And then I start thinking like, oh, who do I know? And I start thinking, oh, I know a guy. I know a biologist in that area. So I'm going to shoot him a message. You know, oh, I know a game warden in that area. I'm going to talk to him about it and just start identifying areas based on kind of feedback. So that's like my first, and then I don't usually get into like e-scouting until a little bit later in the year, but that's like typically my very first step is just like networking. I just want to, and cruising forums, same thing. I mean, I'll read a billion forums.
Yeah.
I mean, every thread something. And it's mostly just people's, you know, smart ass being like, hooch, first post, way to go.
Yeah.
You know, knuckled. Anyway, but it's a lot of that, but every once in a while you'll pick up like just a name or a spot or an individual that's hunted it that you can like reach out to. I wanted to ask, so e-scouting, I want to go back to this. So let's say, antelope, deer, elk.
Can I add one thing from
absolutely
what you said though? So I feel like I have very, very normal expectation or very like,
reasonable.
Mm-hmm. I have very reasonable expectation because as crazy as this sounds, it is true. I've never killed a buck with a bow in my home state. It's pretty wild to think.
You've never killed a buck at all?
I've killed bucks out of Nevada.
Yeah.
Not
with a bow.
In a big one. One big one. But never with a bow. I've killed dozen plus with my bow over the years, like good bucks. Yeah. So I have this thing in my head where it's like, my expectations are super reasonable because I've never killed a buck with a bow in my home state. So right there, I'm like, okay, I would first day, first morning, you know, this class of buck. I would absolutely go try to kill it. And I feel like it's a very reasonable bar. You were just talking about killing the best buck of your life, which you have some great bucks.
Some great bucks.
So do you feel like your expectations are reasonable or like pretty, like you potentially could eat the tag? Because I feel like my expectations are at a level that I shouldn't have to eat the tag. Or at least if I can execute the stock and shot, right? I shouldn't have to eat it. I should be able to find one at this bar in this area
that
I'm willing to go after. But if it was the best buck of my life, I probably might not find that.
Yeah, you might be real stressed.
So
do you feel like you...
Do you, are you adding stress?
I'm adding because stress of that? Because of that, yeah.
See, I know this is where some of my stress has come off.
Because right, yeah.
This bar where I'm like, yep. Oh, I would love to kill a buck of that class with my bow in my home state. And it's super reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I'm willing to go till the end to try to find a deer that I really am really
the
happy
best
with.
Of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, that, say, but that would stress, that is some stress for sure.
Yeah, and like I'm kind of the opposite of you. I've killed archery bucks here in Nevada, but I've never had a rifle tag before too. So I'm like, okay, so now it's finally a chance to take out my 300 rum. Like rifle, that's the most trustworthy rifle of all time.
Yeah.
And have my rifle, all my other skills that I have, all my optics, all my glass, and put them to the test and network and try to find big giant deer and then hunt a big giant deer.
Yeah.
But then, like I was telling you, I mean, like when it kind of rains and pours, I also, so I've had to change my schedule completely because of this tag. I've dumped everything. I've turned back a mule deer tag. I already have. Canceling a mule deer opportunity. I wanted to go in a new state and just try it out. And then
all
I didn't,
on the backbone of trying to kill the best buck.
Kill the best buck. And I did not apply in Wyoming when stressful. I could have. I had the points to draw.
I'm just realizing I've never had that thought. I don't think I've ever had a tag that I was like, this is my opportunity to kill the best buck or bull of my lifetime. Like, I don't think it's ever crossed my mind.
Yeah.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah. I mean, ignorance is bless, they say.
Yeah. So throughout all that stuff of being like, not saying threw it away, but like had to make drastic changes to my schedule. But then I have one I can't change as well. That's in the month of October. That's like another once in a lifetime opportunity. Like I'm going mountain goat hunting.
Yeah.
Like I have this on top of me as well. So now I even have a tighter window because to go mountain goat hunting, it's not like, oh, you just go drive 2 hours and we go hike up. It's like, no, it's a excursion. It's an adventure hunt. Yeah. It's a lot of travel to go do this. And yeah. I mean, it's a great thing.
See,
to have.
That's where I find like the enjoyment in my tag is like, oh, I'd be pumped to kill a buck of that caliber.
Sure.
With my bow. And it's like, yeah, that's doable. It's like, should be really doable.
Yeah. Expectations is a lot.
Oh, and, a huge and, part and, of these types
and,
of tags.
Yeah. And how you handle any hunt for that matter, whether it's over the counter or a great draw tag, like your expectations.
Yeah, so sorry, I wanted to check in on that.
Great.
When he said the best buck of his life, I'm like, ooh, that's not my expectation.
Yeah.
And I just really do. I have a number in mind, but I really do.
Well, you have some great bucks that you shot, some phenomenal bucks.
But I really want a trashy buck.
This is a great place.
Most of my bucks are all clean. I don't have any kickers. I don't have any. I mean, I have just barely anything. I have inlines. I have multiple inlines.
That's what's stressful though.
We can trade mounts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's stressful though too.
Yeah.
You're in the spot
for trash.
That's what it is pretty known for.
Yeah.
That's a good goal. I wanted to go back to e-scouting real quick. So let's say you have, this is a question I get commonly. So you've got elk, deer, antelope, and you're doing e-scouting. So for those three species, what do you think is like the most important as far as e-scouting? Like, what are you looking for those three species? So I'll take antelope first and foremost. I think water's everything.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So spend all your time looking for water sources. That one's pretty easy.
That one's
and access. So access public lands. If you know you're gonna hunt public lands. So where are your access roads, your county roads, your state roads, the roads that you can get on and water. Yep. Mm-hmm. And from there you should be able to find some antelope. So that's pretty easy. But like mule deer, what do you think is the most critical fact? Like where would you spend most of your time e-scouting for mule deer?
I mean, this is a different type of mule deer tag than I've had. I've hunted the other stuff before, but like on a normal mule deer hunt, I'm looking for glassing places. I want to be able to glass a lot of country.
That's what I thought you'd say.
I want to find some burns, but I also want to find places I can glass into like really good edge habitat where a buck could feel safe, kind of coming out to the edge of the opening, but kind of staying in it and still be able to glass in some of that prime habitat. So it's like, glassing points to me would be key.
That's what I'd say. And then elk, I think you spend more time actually looking at habitat.
Oh, yeah.
Like elk's roads, like trails,
habitat.
Yeah, distance from roads and trails, where they're going to go, where's the pressure going to come from, where's the best habitat, where's the water, whereas I feel like mule deer, like glassing points, first and foremost, then habitat, looking at it, and then it's just interesting, three different species, it's like three different approaches.
I completely agree, because antelope, it's so straightforward, water, elk is so straightforward, habitat, and then deer is like this kind of variable thing where for me, with being an archery, water, yes, for sure, but not just as simple as water. Like it's going to be water with a canyon that runs to it with good shade in the afternoon, to saddle points, to you know, good exit areas mm-hmm. for them where they're not just running across a huge flat in the open, which obviously an antelope's like big flat. Hell yeah. That's where I'm gonna live. So deer is kind of this weird, you got to be able to glass them, but you have to find the water that is most likely going to hold them. That's got to have some shaded canyons and afternoon shade. And for me, cause it's going to be 110 degrees.
Yeah. Shooting mule deer in a dry state like Nevada or even Utah, wherever it might be, off of water, out of a blind, it's not a great strategy.
People
kill deer, but it's the exception.
I've had so many people ask me, are you going to set water? I'm like, hell no.
Not the norm, I would say. I'm
pigeonholing myself to the least likelihood of killing.
It's really hard to kill a big buck off of water.
And it's really hard for me to hunt a place that's super thick and there's no vantage points and no openings to shoot into. So sometimes I was doing this weekend, it's kind of crossing off some places. Like they're on a map, it doesn't look like there's any place to glass into that. And if there is, well, you get half a second to see a deer and you're never going to see him again because it's literally a sea of forest.
Yeah. So I know what you should do. You should steel hunt it with a lever action.
I mean,
here we go.
That's one thing I've always said is I really wish I was a better steel hunter, but steel hunting snow. I mean, like that'd be a little bit better, but okay, yeah, learn how to track in the desert is a great skill. A lot of people do it in a lot of states.
There are a couple of people.
I need to go back and listen to all those podcasts that those guys had on.
There's one guy you should talk to for sure.
Mm, okay.
It's a famous guy on the Arizona Strip. Mm. Can you guess? He's lived there his whole life.
Dying breed.
Family's from there.
I should know it.
Kills a lot of big deer.
I know. Listened to him before.
Can you guess? Dude, that guy... I've spent some time with him in Mexico. That guy, there is something that he knows about desert tracking and still hunting. And that's how he does it. And just the little pieces I've gotten from him, just in the time in Mexico I've spent with him. Like the guy is truly, it's like hunting with a Native American almost. Like he'll look at the ground and I'm like, tell me what you're, you know, what are you looking at? What are you doing? And just these little things I've picked up from him. If you can still hunt the desert, you're in a good spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can track and still hunt, you're in a good spot.
So you're mostly east scouting.
Who do you think it is I'm talking about?
Rhymes with Monday.
Yes.
Yeah. Probably says Monday like Monday.
Yes. Also.
Yeah.
Also. He's such a stud, man. Yeah. He's like one of the best dudes on the planet.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So east scouting, And then scouting, when do we really start getting out and scouting? Hanging trail cameras. We talking end of June, July?
Yeah, so for me, it's going to be end of June because unfortunately I have a wedding to go to
in the middle of
June. I mean, it's going to be fun.
It's going to be the happiest day of their life, but unfortunately you have to be there.
Yeah, so I have to go that. I mean, like, I already feel bad too because there's supposed to be another wedding I'm supposed to go to in October. And instantly she's like, oh, I see where I'm at, second place. Because of you do a sick tag.
Another
once in a lifetime tag. And so I had to like, okay, yes.
Welcome to this life.
I'm not going to that other October wedding, but I'm going to this one. But then also right after this October or this June wedding, I have to go to the SIG event over in the East Coast. So that's 4 or 5 days I'm gone as well, which is going to be another phenomenal time. But that's like, dang, that's right when I need to put some cameras out. So I'd literally come back on a Friday from that. And then I'm already going to have all my trail cameras, batteries, memory cards, all that stuff ready to rock. And then leave that night after being jet lagged.
Yep.
I think I land at like 7 o'clock at night and then instantly turn around, burn, drive, go hang cameras all weekend.
Gotcha.
So late June.
Give us a quick rundown on anything else you're doing as far as both of you. I mean, physical prep. Are you guys physical prep for the season?
I didn't fully do this in a sense, but now I'm like, it was kind of a smart. So everyone knows I run all the time and I run in the evenings mostly, but now I've switched it to kind of running in the morning so I can run a little bit longer. And I'm starting to run. It's like, it actually is really hot in the morning. Cause I can just beat down sun, where the evenings I would wait till it's sun slightly goes down, which still is 100 degrees out, but at least it's not beating down sun. So right now I'm kind of like heat training myself.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a thing, but in my mind, I'm like, working out when it's really, really hot out in the morning to train myself for hunting when it's going to be really, really hot out.
Sure.
Smart.
And then while I'm scouting in the summer, trying to glass, and then throughout the rest of the fall, it's going to be hot and I'm going to start acclimating myself in a way, even though I live in the desert too. So I'm always used to hot, but doing that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Better than that, not really anything changed physical.
Gotcha.
I mean,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Stay in shape. But I did the other change I started doing right away is I went through and I'm starting to do a deep clean of my reloading room.
Mm-hmm.
Getting that baby dialed because you're going to have to shoot a lot to get prepped for this hunt. And I mean, my gun stays ready, but like I want to make sure it's golden for the what could be the most important hunt I have for a while.
I will say the hunts that I've been on in the late season, distance is a it's a competitive advantage.
A factor for sure.
When you're hunting that style of desert, it's a major factor.
When will you start putting a lot of rounds downrange?
I'm going to probably wait till late July-ish. I mean, it's going to be hot no matter what, but I would rather do a bunch of scouting when I can, burn up all that time, analyzing things, do a bunch of e-scouting now, because that's more important in terms of priority. I mean, I've already been shooting a bunch because we just got back from New Zealand, so I was shooting a different rifle. This one rifle, you know, the same rifle I've taken to Tajikistan is why I built it. It's just for dream hunts. But then once late July, August, September timeframe comes, like the problem is with us, we have to shoot such a finite time in the morning because it's really hot out. So yeah. I'll start to go daily to the rifle range and maybe shoot five rounds and call it good. Just 'cause it's so hot and just, make sure everything's just perfect and work it through and up to the hunt.
Nice.
But it's just a lot of reloading. So that's why I need to get reloading room all dialed.
Reloading.
Yeah.
Getting gear in order. Get your body in shape.
Yep.
A lot of e-scouting and networking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As I was thinking about, that's what I'm doing. A lot of networking. Just identifying areas and then e-scouting.
That's the parts of that, though, is like staying in shape year-round. Like staying ready. Weapon proficiency, like we get to stay ready with that. So it really comes down to like... It is the networking and scouting that is that finite.
Sure.
Got to get it done. That's the stressful part.
Because even once, when like archery hunts are going on, I want to be scouting.
I
want boots on the ground a little bit. See kind of where people are at. Yep. See where they're moving things around. And then September heavily as well, because that's like the month before my hunt. And so I want to... Like you said, you're going to be out there, 3 days before your tag opens? I think
I'd imagine you'll probably come with me.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yep. And I'm going to try
kill
to do
two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm, 3 or 4 days before my hunt. I want to scout really hard. I'd rather front load it scouting.
Yep.
I want to tie down a buck. Literally want to watch him every single day if possible. And I want to kill him opening day.
Yep.
I really want to
buy
do
a
all...
net gun. That's fine.
Tie him up.
Yeah. Net gun, tie him up.
Yeah, so that's my goal of the hunt, and if it has to go longer, it's going to go longer, but I really want to do all the work ahead of time, so make that for opening day stressful for a little bit, but then a little bit less stressful because I did all the work. I prepped everything.
Yeah. The goal in this one, like if you're trying to wrap it up in a bow, it's like I want to be happy about killing opening morning and not feeling like my hunt was cut short. You know, because there are some hunts, like a backcountry hunt is a great example. You know, you want some days back there. You want to enjoy it.
Yep.
You didn't boots on the ground scout it because I don't have the time or the lifestyle to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of want it to go a little deep into the hunt to get the full experience.
Yeah.
I want to put enough work into this one where it's like opening day, opening hour. Like, yes, that
feel,
was
feel
a
good about
fulfilled
killing.
Hunt.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
And I've always said too on normal hunts, like a high country hunt, a late season hunt, or whatever mule deer, I'd rather kill in the last day than the first. I don't believe in, why pass them the first day, you should kill them the last day. I'd rather extend my hunt all the time because in that case, I'm learning so much about the animal, learning so much about the state, the country, the terrain that maybe I can come back to it because I hunt shitty units all the time.
Yeah.
But in this case, the best. I'm not going to touch it again most likely. So I'd rather get it done right away, have a buck already located and be in.
And have enough time previous to where you don't feel shortchanged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to do all the work. I want to understand that I put everything into this hunt, no matter how it ends up. And no matter what I shoot or don't shoot, I'm going to be happy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This very much reminds me of like I'm talking to two people that have deer tags. Like this is a deer hunter's mindset that you guys have right here. Like mine's not completely different, but a lot different. Like I won't put boots on the ground for any of the elk tags.
You're going to go in there, learn it, enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm going to do a lot of effort networking, a lot of effort scouting, a lot of effort trying to get in shape, a lot of effort with my weapon, trying to make sure that I have a good bow that aims well, that's tuned well, that I've shot every broadhead, that every arrow's nock tuned, you know, do as much as I possibly can with my equipment, my physical fitness, e-scouting, networking. And then I'm just going to go out there and give it hell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, there's very different mindsets depending on animal and what they, you know, what people do to prep.
So what about though? One thing I know you don't do very often.
Workout.
No. I mean, yes, Terrell, you should work out and not have energy drinks and Diet Cokes. Well. What about like working and calling?
Man, no, but that's a good one.
Because that's the thing I really from knowing you, that's yeah, the I thing work, every year.
I don't work on it. I've worked on it more in the last few years than I have up leading up to that. But
another tool in your toolkit.
Yeah, it would be great. I will say like I have worked on it a little bit more starting like June, July, like, you know, driving down here to Vegas is a great example. I've got 2.5 hours drive every Tuesday and then 2.5 going back where I can just straight blow a bugle and work on cow calls. Yeah. And that's a great use of my time. One other thing kind of on along the same lines is like, I like to ramp up, you know, June, July, like just listening, like consuming informational, educational, like on calling. Right. Yeah. So I want to listen to guys like Dirk and Bo. Yeah. I want to listen to those guys call. I want to listen to podcasts that they've done with other people. I want to listen to podcasts where people talk about shot execution in high pressure situations. Like, YouTube. I think YouTube's awesome. It's got a ton of different resources. So I consume quite a bit of YouTube, even just to keep the stoke high.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, like nothing jacks you up like seeing, you know, a perfect call sequence and a big bolt comes in and some dude laces it. You know what I mean? It's the best.
It's like watching a highlight film of football.
Yeah.
It's like it just gets you ready.
Yeah. Just the stoke goes through the roof. Just makes you want to run through a wall, right?
Yeah.
So do you think it would be beneficial when you're listening to all that stuff, you're saying no, or like watching a YouTube, or because I can't remember what the guy's name is. Isn't Paul something? The guy Elk Nut.
I don't know.
The guy who has the Elk Nut playbook is a little. He had DVDs back in the day.
I should know, but I don't.
Okay, so
it's
like
not ringing a bell.
Like I had that book back when they were living in Montana. But basically, like understanding. Okay, that elk is making that sound.
I don't believe
what does
that.
It mean. Do you ever try to like dive into that
to
much?
To some extent, but I don't know if I completely buy into that.
Buy into that?
So there's like, definitely bull, like when a bull screams, like all out screams, like I know that, yeah, okay, he's agitated, he's pissed off. And I know what a locator bugle sounds like. You know, I know what a, you know, what a bark is, and you know, when the wind hits my essentials. Back and I'm like, shit, that's over. But as far as like,
but like,
oh,
use that to your advantage.
They have a real consistent, like rounding their cows up to move kind of bugle. Yeah. Like those ones, those are pretty consistent. But
to then know how to respond, maybe that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, he's saying this, so this is what I could say back, or you know, that sort of thing, just to add that extra edge.
Yeah, put it in the back of my mind a little bit. Okay. I don't know. I hunt by feel so much when I'm out there. It's just like, what is he doing? Where's he at? Where's he going? You know, what can I do to cut the distance? Where should I be? I don't know. I just hunt.
Do you want me to dig up those old DVDs and CDs?
I was going
to have in the books.
We'll give them
to you.
You know what we'll do? We'll get somebody on this summer. Like as we get closer, July, August timeframe, we'll get somebody that really dives deep into elk and what elk are saying. And we'll have a little debate.
Elk communication.
A little elk communication podcast. Really pick somebody's brain. I think... Has Joel talked about that? About knowing what elk say and when? I don't know. Maybe we could.
Yeah, Joel does a really good job.
Yeah, right.
He does a really good job of explaining, like, I can't do it justice, but every time I've heard him talk about it, he's like, oh, it's like a guy going into a bar and you're you know, blowing up the whole room, bugling, trying to push the lady around. It's the guy who was talking about, it's Paul Medel, Medel, Elk Nut.
Outdoors. Yeah, maybe we'll get somebody on this summer. We'll really do a deep dive in elk calling. I think that'd be a good one. Yeah, it'd be great. Everybody has him for like the, you know, the archery side of things, the mental coaching, but the guy's a really good elk caller. So might
he
be fun.
He does have a rifle course too.
Might be fun elk calling.
Actually, that would be a really enjoyable podcast. I would like that one.
Yeah. He's probably getting sick of talking shot IQ, right?
Yeah.
So let's just talk elk calling.
Yeah. Well, actually, I like it too, because I'm kind of in the same boat as you, where I think there is something to like, whether it's the inflection or aggressiveness in their call or lackadaisicalness on the other side of that, like that you can kind of get a feel for what the bull's communicating. But I don't know if I believe that like you could know exactly what they're saying for then you to say, no, come here. Yeah. Don't go there. Come here. Like I don't know if you could tell a bull that.
Yeah. I can't.
I get it. But I also think like knowing just a little bit though might help. When you're in one weird situation, say like say eight, and you're like, okay, if I do this right now, maybe it might.
I think it could help. I think we would all gain some help from it. But yeah, I mean, to believe in like the full communication of like, no, you come here. I don't want to go there. You come here. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know if we can get to that level.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, it'd be good though. We'll flesh that out come summer. Yeah, but that's a good one. I'm going to put that on my list of things I need to do that I can work on. The other things I had on my list, I think for the elk hunter, the archery elk hunter, I think gear prep this time of year is a really important thing to do. Like if you're going to get a new pair of boots, May is a great time to buy them. May, June.
Yes.
Buy the damn boots, put miles on them, make sure that they're broken. They're not going to absolutely eat your feet alive. I think that's a really good one. Same with your pack. I think it's really important to shoot with your pack on.
Weighted pack. So,
yeah. Archery practice, I think.
With a pack on.
Yeah. And then different positions, you know, from your knees, sitting down, you know, uphill, downhill, side hill. I know the other day I was shooting some side hill stuff. I was shooting basically the same plane, but I was just side hill, you know, leaning in it. Man, it's different. It's hard. Even your foot position, just like leaning. Do I lean on my back foot? Do I lean on my front foot when I'm shooting uphill or downhill? Like, where do I distribute the weight of my body? Yeah. How do I draw my bow? Where do I aim? Do I bend at the hips? Like, there's all these little things that I think you don't necessarily think about. You need to and start practicing.
Interesting.
So you remember when we were shooting at Tech and I was struggling with the side hills?
Yeah.
And I kept asking you, I'm like, just watch me. What am I doing?
Yeah.
And I was leaning too much into the hill.
Overcompensating for it. Yeah. Right.
So it's like those are the things that you got to practice. You got to see where you're weak to figure it out.
Yeah. And while watching your bubble. So getting your, this is a great one as far as I put a lot of time and effort into setting up my bow. And that's, you know, setting it up to aim well, setting it up to tune well. So I'm paper tuning every arrow. I'm bear shaft tuning. And then axis is, so setting your first, second, and third axis on my sight to make sure that when I'm shooting uphill, downhill, side hills, that my axes are leveled, that I'm going to hit the dot that I'm aiming at. So that's something I put a lot of time and effort into too.
Yeah.
I think so much of archery elk hunting, finding them, absolutely. You got to know where to find them. But I think so much of it is like, the equipment to get you out there, the physical fitness to maintain it, the mental fortitude to stay with it day in and day out. Cause I really think that's the thing that matters the most is just stick-to-itiveness.
Yep.
Day in, day out, keep at it. You're going to get your ass kicked most days, but you got to stay with it day in, day out, keep going.
You're going to fail.
You're going to fail a
nine
ton.
Times out of 10. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think there's much less, stress involved in like picking, you know, the right bull, scouting for the right bull scouting the right, you know, the right spot exactly. Cause it's just, they're malleable. They move so damn much.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about shooting with backpack on and shooting situationally and all that stuff, I've only been, I think, to two or three tack.
Mm-hmm.
But I never see anyone shooting with the backpack on.
Yeah.
Why don't more people actually go up there instead of wearing like, oh, I'm going to wear this muscle shirt and wear my hip quiver on the side.
You're talking Utah tax or are we talking?
Yeah, I'm talking Utah tax. Because you're up there having a good time and it's fun and like it's hot normally. So you're hiking up and down. Yeah. But like, why don't people wear their 40-pound pack?
They should.
Fully loaded up so you can feel how it's going to shoot. Because you have perfect chances to like one knee up, one knee down, kneeling down, standing around, shooting courses with your heavy pack on to prepare yourself for elk season. You shoot with pack on all the time, right? I watch you guys' videos.
I do for
you
elk.
Shoot elk all the time.
Most mule deer probably don't get shot with a full pack on.
No, but you're an elk guy.
It's too loud, but elk hunters for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Going into those elk hunts the last however many years we've been doing, I only shoot with a pack on.
No.
Really common to shoot an elk with a full pack.
Yeah.
Much less so, I would say almost never for mule deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
you're trying to minimize the noise and movement, right? I don't know.
Just saying.
Maybe because they're just mule deer hunters. Those extended hunts on the
Wasatch. They don't want to sweat all day because it is.
Yeah, I don't want to sweat all day. As you said, it sounds miserable.
It does.
But
so is archery elk hunting a lot of times. Pretty miserable, right?
Yeah.
You got to have mental toughness to do it.
Not as miserable as mule deer hunting, though. I'll say that.
Agreed.
Cool. Anyway, yeah, we got to cut Lorenzo loose. He's got another meeting. He's got to go to B2. But any last thoughts? That was a good little BS session.
That was.
It's been a hot minute since we had a chance to just sit down and bullshit. So
yeah,
I would say
I just
right
want
now.
Brady to take note of how well I didn't say units or
you did really well. Names.
Thanks, man.
You did really, really well.
So I want that sign off from you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is one where it's rare that you can hear me actually mention the state. But like I said, I got to get better. I got to get better at networking. I got to.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I do it when people ask me when it's something that I'm never going to hunt again. But it's like I don't go forward with it myself and I need to break that barrier down.
I think you get back what you put out. So yeah, people reach out and you put out there good info, you know, try to help them out, do the best you can. I think that stuff comes back around, even if it's not directly through them. I just think it's, I think karma's a real thing. I think you put good out there, I think you get it back. And, you know, I certainly have. I was going to comment as far as feedback goes and just, you know, networking. So on our unit profiles now, you can now drop photos, right? So that whole process has improved a bunch.
All the unit profile comments.
Yep.
All the and unit it's being used like crazy, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a guy that reached out to us. I apologize. I don't have the name off the tip of my tongue, but essentially made a good friend off of a unit profile. They got together and they've hunted, and now they've drawn, one of them's drawn a mountain goat tag, and those guys are going out and they're going mountain goat hunting.
It's the best story ever. One guy drew a tag and he had nobody to go with. He commented on the unit profile. Has anybody been here? Him and a guy started talking. Now they're like lifelong hunting buddies.
Yeah.
And one of them just drew a once in a lifetime goat tag and they're going together. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that was from a unit profile within your insider account.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Brady, I expect to see your name in some of those units saying, hey, reach out. I need some intel.
I mean, the photo thing I think is phenomenal.
It's really cool.
Because mainly it's like, I kind of want to see, you know, terrain. Mm-hmm. I want to see burns. I want to see blowdowns. I want to see what people are experiencing. And again, don't be blowing it up, but like you could have just like what you're experiencing in the mountain. Like that's a cool photo to look at when you're looking at a unit profile.
I think so much of it too helps you. It helps with your expectations because I know that the deer tag that I had in Nevada a few years ago, I looked at a ton of photos and I didn't see that many bucks that were like 180, 190 plus, you know? And everybody I talked to, every forum I read, you'll see tons of deer. There is a potential for a big buck, but most of the photos that I saw, you know, 160 to 180 inch bucks. And I was like, okay, cool. That's kind of what I'm looking at. And that ultimately ended up being like what I saw.
Yeah.
But it left me feeling better when I came home that I was like, oh shit, I didn't kill a 200 inch deer. I didn't, you know, reach the potential for that permit. Right. So I think it's really good. It helps your expectations with the hunt. I think your expectations are really important going into a hunt.
I think that's like number one.
I agree.
What is it? What are you getting out of it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do I want out of this thing? What I'm going to be satisfied with?
Yep.
Yep. Since it's a mule deer tag, anything's okay.
It's not even an elk tag, Brady. Let's just go out there.
It's not even an elk tag. We're going to title this podcast, it's not even an elk tag.
Let's just go hunt it. Have a good time. Yeah. It's not even an elk tag.
Well, cool. Thanks for jumping on. I think through the summer, my plan at least, is I would like to dive in and like ask some individuals that are like really good mule deer hunters, really good elk hunters, you know, talk about the individual aspects of like elk hunting and deer hunting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe do some stuff on glassing, maybe some e-scouting stuff. I'd love to talk to some guys that are like diehard, really good elk callers.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some guys that are spot and stock type, you know, elk hunters, because there's definitely those guys that are out there. So some
guys really good at hunting the desert, tracking.
That and we also
I'll see if Clay wants to come down and
that'd be awesome. Yeah. That'd be really fun.
Dude, he's such a good guy.
Yeah.
He's one of those people where you just you appreciate that you crossed paths with him. He's one of those kind of people.
For sure.
Oh, another thing I've done, sorry, we're getting long winded, dusted off a bunch of the old mule deer books. Over the weekend.
Oh, let's go.
I'm getting them stacked up, which one's my priority, which ones I want to go and reread that I know might cater in a way to some of the style of hunting I'm going to be doing. Mm-hmm. But those and then some biology mule deer books too. So
I'll say that that's super important if you're relatively new to it. Because I would say the behavior, animal behavior
yep.
is so important. And if you don't have the experience to lean into to know why animals do what they do and when, I would say that's a huge first step. It's just understanding why does an elk do what it does when it does it? Why does a mule deer do what it does? Yeah. Other than it's just dumb.
don't make me throw my elk things out there right now to get people riled up about how much.
I really like to give it to you like that.
Yeah,
so.
Come on, Brady.
All right, so with that, we'll cut Lorenzo loose.
All right.
We'll check out. Thanks for
that. I got to pee too.
Yeah, you too.
Bad.
Okay. Let's do it.
See ya. See ya.